Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. Nina Simone, of whom better there never was, practically. Is that grammar? No, it's not even grandpa. It's nothing. But she was really astounding. Beautiful, unique voice, and tremendous feeling and passion. Just incredible. Absolutely incredible. Speaking of unique voices, if this show is even more disjointed and wanders around more than usual today, it's because one of my best friends just died about 7 or 8 days ago. Actually, now it's 8 days. Steve Post, who most of you who maybe are under the age of 30 may never have heard of, possibly even under the age of 40. He was about my age, about 70 years old, and he was a big star in New York City radio for almost 40 years, starting around 1965, I think it was. He first went on the air at WBAI in New York, and later on he was on WNYC as their, for 20 years, as their morning host. It was morning classical music show, but Steve was an astounding radio personality, one of the best people who was ever on the radio. I don't know if there's anything on YouTube. I don't know if there are tapes available online or clips available. You could search if you want. Search for any kind of recording of Steve Post's stuff. I mean, I will talk more about him. He was my friend for, like I say, close to 50 years. And when I say he was my friend, I mean, I started out like a lot of other people listening to him on the radio, but the quality of his voice and his what he talked about was so personal, like everybody on BAI in those days, which is where a lot of people like me graduated from, if we ever graduated at all, that you felt like he was your friend. And he called his show The Outside, and it wasn't any mistake. But there, in the 60s, I mean, anybody who just gets out of their parents' house and lives on their own for the first time, or, you know, for many other reasons, a lot of people, tens, hundreds of thousands of people in New York City, especially during the 60s, felt like they were outside the mainstream of everything, let alone outside the world, when you're new in the world like that, and you're young and teenagers, and when you're just out of college and have no idea what you're doing in the world. And he was there because he felt exactly the same way. So you listen to him like he was a good friend of yours. Later on, I worked with him. And after I stopped working with him, we remained friends. So it's weighing. It's still a shock, and it's still weighing on me. So if I wander around even more than usual, that's the reason. I'm trying to get used to it. I will talk about my experiences with him. For those of you who knew Steve Post or listened to him on the radio, and there are hundreds of thousands of people, you know, who that category fits. Well, stay tuned. When I get somewhat a little distance from it, when I calm down, if I calm down, I will talk more about my listening to him and my experiences with him and trying to run this insane radio station, BAI, which nobody has ever successfully run in its history to this day, even though they may try hard. These days, because of various severe health things that happened to me a few months ago and then continued to happen to me, and also various other reasons, I catch myself fantasizing a lot and sometimes daydreaming. And I make this distinction. There is a distinction between daydreaming, fantasies, visions, and hallucinations. I was thinking about this. I may even be hallucinating now. I may actually imagine I'm in a radio station broadcasting to you, but I don't think so. That's my hand. That's the table. No, reality testing. When you go into a psychiatric hospital, they ask you standard questions. They say, do you know what the date is? Do you know what the year is? What's the month? What's the year? Then they say, do you know who the president is? it's a tricky question. I mean, if you have any kind of complex mind, you could say, you have to say Obama, or else I'll put you in a straitjacket or hit you with an injection of something which will put you out of your mind for 10 days. So you want to get that stuff straight, right? Maybe you don't know, so you don't say, because you don't know. But if you know, it's better. And in they call it orienting as to time and place. So I did have to think for a second when somebody asked me once who the president was, because to me, it didn't make any difference who the president was. But I'm not going to have a whole long political discussion with an intake shrink at a psychiatric hospital. Anyhow, they orient you to that. So, but hallucinations, yes, I have had hallucinations, and God forbid I ever have them again. I still have little baby, tiny hallucinations, but I got so used to them over the years that they don't scare me like they used to. They don't scare me at all, as a matter of fact. Every once in a while, if I get really, really anxious, or as I am these days often, or I get, worried about something, but get quite anxious, I might see little black dots. I used to, at the sides of my eyes, and part of that is trouble with a certain kind of problem that some people have with their eyes. But the other part of it is it's a kind of like minor league paranoia where you think you see bugs. That's right. And but actually they're just black spots. So that doesn't bother me anymore. But there was one or two times in my life when I had real hallucinations, which are absolutely terrifying. The worst are, I should say worst, who am I to compare? But an audio hallucination where you think somebody's actually speaking to you and you can think you can hear their voice. Happened to me a few times in my life, and that's really terrifying. And then I've had visual hallucinations where one time I saw street lights, street light poles bending down like something from Alice in Wonderland or a Disney cartoon, and then sometimes people's eyes turning red, teeth growing out of people's mouth. Yes, I know. But that's hasn't happened for, I don't know, 40, 50 years. So, but I've had those. And then there are what I call visions, not just what I call visions, which are, to me, legitimate messages from another world, from a parallel universe or from another world that is given to you. And it doesn't happen that often. It might not even happen at all in your life. And some people, I suppose, if you're rational or if you're a therapist, you might say, it's not a vision, it's a hallucination, or it's a fantasy that's become too real. Well, you know, I feel like I know the difference because I've had I've had two or three visions in my life, one of which I'll tell you about later. And a vision is, I think, an extremely powerful thing because it's not something, in my opinion, that you manufacture. It's not a daydream. It's not a fantasy. It's not a hallucination. It comes from your own terrors and desires being broadcast out in the world so you think they're real. No, a vision is something given to you or transmitted to you from yet another world somewhere, a parallel universe or some other place. And it concerns you, obviously. So the vision is presented to you. Often visions like this lead people to change their entire lives or shift something inside you where you not just change your life, perhaps, but your internal life, at least, is adjusted and is never the same after that. It's a way of knowing who you really are. And I think it's like granted to people sometimes who are in a state, even if it's not conscious, of perpetual search for who they are, right? We all are one way or another. It gets obscured, overwhelmed, and filtered out by relationships, jobs, the common tasks of the million common tasks of daily life. When you get older, there's a lot of maintenance you have to do, you know, like, did I put the drops in my eyes? Did I have an appointment to the doctor on Thursday or was it Friday? But, you know, there's a million things you have to do. And also a lot of people, I'd say a lot of people, 99% of the people in the world do not want to be subject to these things. I mean, maybe you want to have you know, visions, or you want to be presented with things like this, but you can't demand to have a vision. It is granted to you. But people are always in search of themselves, I believe, even if you're busy, but it's unconscious in almost all of your waking hours. It's unconscious. Dreams fit into this too. Sometimes when you're awake, there's a valve in some people. There's a valve in all people which shuts off dreams, you know, things from the subconscious that filter into you, these weird things like nightmares or odd, bizarre dreams, you know, dreams that you remember. They're all so strange and distorted, quote unquote, distorted. But these things, there's a valve, obviously, for mental health and to be able to actually function in the world that turns off this channel that is broadcast into your mind from the subconscious when you're asleep. Unless, of course, you stimulate it on purpose by taking some kind of special drug or put yourself in a state where you experience these things. But, you know, for almost everybody on Earth, almost all the time, when you're awake, you don't want to be dreaming. You don't want to be subject to this kind of strange distortions and percolations and arisings from your unconscious. You don't want to, so it's turned off. And yet, these things are always with you. I think my knowledge about Freud or, you know, psychiatric terms is limited, but I think it's called dream residue. Might have been Freud who came up with this idea, dream residue. Like sometimes during the day, you have this feeling of that you're not quite rid of something that happened the night before. You had some kind of like serious dream or some compelling or intense dream, And during the day, I could be getting this completely wrong, but I mean, the idea is, if the phrase isn't right, is that you carry these things with you during the day. Do you ever have a really astounding dream or, you know, an overwhelming dream? And the next day, even though you go about your same tasks as usual at your job or in relation to other people, you feel sort of in a semi-trance, or that you're not all quite there, because the dream itself, you may not even remember it or the details of it, but the dream itself has gripped you or rattled you so much that you are in its possession sort of during the course of the day. That I think that's called dream residue, but I'm not really sure. And then there are fantasies. Fantasies are different than daydreams. Daydreams are what you catch yourself doing. Let's say that you're, on a bus, or you're in some situation where... Now, this is, I should say, that this is before modern technology completely. Before all the stuff you plug into your ears and stuff that you could look at out of your pocket and see all kinds of astounding graphic things and video games and stuff like that, just by punching something that's right in front of your face every day, every minute. People didn't used to have that. I mean, this is a new thing in the world. And I think that's something which I'm not really sure if it's, like I've said before many times, it has its downsides and it has its upsides. To process dreams that people have, sometimes they need to percolate inside you during the course of your regular day. Sometimes these powerful dreams, and sometimes in dreams, messages could be sent to you, I believe. Sometimes it's just something you're sending to yourself, but sometimes there are communications, because the dream world, where the valve is open between your subconscious and your conscious mind, and your conscious mind takes a back seat to what's going on underneath, below, and it's always going under, going on, whether you're awake or asleep. When you're asleep, it actually, serves a function. The reason you're sleeping is so that your body and your mind and your emotions can repair themselves. It's a marvelous system. Could almost drive one to believe in God. Maybe, who knows, right? That this one of the wonders of life is that you sleep, if you're able to sleep. A lot of people can't sleep well, and a lot of people can't get REM sleep, which is the deepest kind of sleep, where the deepest dreams and experiences will be sent up to your conscious mind. Often you don't remember those. But there's a reason why they're allowed to come up, because otherwise these things are like you become under a pressure cooker. They are suppressed to the point where it actually will disturb your life, and you will become disturbed, and you will become unable to function correctly or to concentrate. That's why sleep is so important, and why, it, unfortunately, in the modern world, people get so little sleep. But before there were headphones that you could plug into your ear, before even transistor radios that people used to play on the bus, you were allowed to do that till they passed a law. Before all these audio things that look like dreams, and you can put the headphones on and you can look at the video, so you get the audio and the video, which look like nightmares or dreams, and you can choose them, right? Before all that, I lived before that time. I did. And so did many other people, many old farts. You didn't have that available to you. So what? So you're on the bus, or you're in a waiting room, and maybe you don't want to look at the stupid magazines. You're in some kind of waiting room to see a doctor, or to do whatever you're doing in some office, to do something to get your taxes done or whatever. And you're bored, and all you had was, in those days, if they had a stack of magazines, or if you brought a book. But if you didn't have that, what you had was, ready for this? You had your mind, you had your imagination. And what would happen is, if you were bored, and even this happens, I think, often to people who are doing jobs which are routine and just boring, and you catch yourself daydreaming, and you're dreaming about, it's usually something that's pleasant, or not boring, or something that's interesting. But that's different, I think, than a fantasy. I separate that from a fantasy, which is something that after careful consideration and selection that you set up. You have a kind of a Rolodex. you have a file folder full of fantasies. That's not bad, right? A file folder full of fantasies. Say that real quick 10 times. Bet you can't do it. So you have a file folder full of fantasies. And depending on how you're feeling and what you need to make yourself feel better, you pull up one of these fantasies. And for many people, it's a rescue fantasy. For other people, it's money that you have and what you do with it. For other people, it gets even more bizarre, sometimes a little strange. But it's okay. This same Mr. Freud, who I spoke about before, perhaps in error, said there really is no such thing as a bad thought. He said there are bad deeds, and there certainly we know about that. All I got to do is pick up the paper. If you want to anymore, since I got really sick several months ago, and since I've been struggling ever since to just stay sane and stay healthy, I have been unable to really read the newspaper because it's always the same horrible stuff. I mean, people are just stealing and thieving and murdering each other and going completely crazy like mad dogs, executing people in villages, bombing everybody, blowing themselves up and killing totally innocent people. Greed is so far out of control that the word greed doesn't even describe the way most people are acting these days. This kind of income inequality. And I mentioned this last week, where 85 people in the world, 85 people on the planet out of 7 billion own or control half the wealth of the planet. And every day you read about this, or there is some new app, or there is some new machine, or there is some new kind of software, you know, Booble.com, where you can get your poodle. You have your poodle's hair shaved at home if you press a button and it lights up and so, I don't know what. But sometimes I wonder, with all the stuff that people are plugged into and people multitask, some people are doing their jobs, but meanwhile they're watching TV while they're doing their jobs. They have like a screen in front of them. That's where they're supposed to be doing their job. But sometimes it's divided into four or eight, and they're watching TV while they're supposed to be doing their job, or they're playing a video game where they're supposed to be doing their job. Now, if you're on, but so in other words, what doesn't exist so much at all anymore is people's actual imaginations, because people don't really need to have an imagination anymore, and they don't need to reflect inside on something about who they are, where they're going, what the world's all about, because they're plugged in. They're plugged into a source of graphic and audio information and fantasies. So artificial or fantasies are available to choose from. I think it's more creative, probably, and probably healthier for you in the end, were you to choose your own fantasies. Now, I don't think that people don't fantasize. Maybe I could find out from some people, you know, that might even be present at the moment. Even though people have screens in front of their faces all the time and they have games they play and everything, do people still fantasize in their own heads? Boys, out there, wake up for a second. If you didn't have the TV and you didn't have a thing in your pocket to look at, and then play video games or graphics and stuff like that, do you still have fantasies of your own that have nothing to do with what's put in from the machine? Yes. See? Yes. And this is a very in-depth, accurate survey of one person I just did. But I think he's a perfectly typical, normal individual. Well, I mean, he's typical anyhow of his age, right? So, but people still have fantasies. Well, that's great to hear. That's great to hear. Now, I have had all these things. I have had hallucinations, unfortunately, which are terrifying beyond words. I've had visions, which have been granted to me. I've had fantasies, and still occasionally do have fantasies. Although, And I'm, you know, daydreams, you know, where I'm somehow like bored and I catch myself drifting or something. And people do that all the time, if they're, especially if they're doing things like common rote things that they have to do. But fantasies are interesting. I mean, cause these days I'm dredging up some old fantasies I have. I have to say that the times in my life, and I know this for a fact, the times in my life where I was absolutely the happiest and the most content with my actual day-to-day life, where I was doing things every day and sometimes for most parts of the day that engaged my my body and my mind and my creativity, is when I did the least fantasizing. So, for instance, when I would go to bed, I would used to be when I wasn't feeling very happy about my life, which was about 90% of the time off and on in my life, I would have ornate, detailed fantasies, like long novels practically, and I would pick them out at night, and I would just, you know, run them like movies in my head, and I would fall asleep to these fantasies. Some of them were violent, some of them sexual, a lot of them had to do with, and this had your fantasies are particular to what your needs are and to how you grew up. The fantasies I used to have, the main fantasies, and I mean, a lot of people have this, are rescue fantasies, where I'm in a position where I, and I'll get into some detail about that later, where I, well, maybe I should tell you now. So the rescue fantasies I used to have would be that there's somebody who has lost their mind or is some vicious criminal, takes a hostage in a bank. And everybody is, and you know, so they point, they have a gun to the head of some innocent woman or some woman and her kid or something like that. And usually these things are adapted to the own, to your own, you know, needs from childhood. Like, for instance, when my father left when I was 4 years old, it was just me and my mother. And I was in a position of feeling like, and I was told that I had to be the little man in the house, that I had to protect her and take care of the house. When I was 4 years old, when I was six, when I was eight, when I was 12, whatever. That was my job way before it was supposed to be my job. But so I have these rescue fantasies all the time. I'm in a bank and or on a plane or something, whatever. And sometimes you update your fantasies to fit into the modern world. And somebody has taken a hostage, you know, in a store or a bank or a plane or something like that, or on a train. And you happen to be there, and for hours and hours and hours, without having anything to drink or eat, without you know, anything, you talk this person out of their craziness, that they want to shoot these people, that they want to kill these people. Somehow you come across it like it's a domestic dispute, and somehow you're right there. This is my main fantasy, where I rescue people. That was connected to another fantasy I had, where there were like drug dealers in my neighborhood, and I would become invisible. Invisibility was something I always liked to have. sometimes this invisibility I would use for voyeuristic purposes, put it that way. Without going into too much detail, where you could just fly around. Of course, flying, you fly around all over the place, and you're invisible. Nobody can see you. So you look in people's windows and you observe their lives, and you can imagine where that could go, right? But here's one. Here was a combination. I'm invisible, and but I'm able to do things to other people, or for other people, even though I'm invisible. So I would hover over where the really bad, vicious drug dealers were, in some local park or around the corner from where I lived. And there were a couple, at least more than a couple, in some neighborhoods that I lived in. I would hang around there, and I would see all this, and I would invisibly, I would either kill them, and nobody would ever know that it was me or how it happened, and I would rid the neighborhood of them, or I would follow the drug pickups and the money pickups back up to where the big boss was and do away with them. So now the reason that I had all these daydreams and fantasies and spent a good part of my life doing that was because I learned this growing up. When I was growing up, it was a matter of survival. The reality of my life as a child, where I lived on in a neighborhood where everybody had a normal house except me, where there was a father who used to beat people up and finally who abandoned the family, where there was a mother who was insane, and I lived in a bedroom that overlooked a huge cemetery. So the reality of my existence was so awful. It was so awful. It was like a bad dream itself, only that was my actual existence. I developed a survival technique of living inside my imagination. And I created tremendous fantasies. Sometimes they would last for hours. And I did that. And I was probably crazy. You know, in a way, I was like psychotic because I wasn't connected to the real world, because the real world was not one I wanted to be in. If I could get out of the house and get on my bicycle and ride mindlessly for hours, I was okay. If I got out of the house and walked around and looked in the gutter and, you know, saw some water from a fire hydrant going down in the gutter and followed it for, let's say, dropped a twig in it and followed it down the entire block till it hit the sewer, it was, you know, it was, I imagined it was the Amazon, and I was on, this twig was a boat that I was on, and, you know, so for me, the line was very, you know, iffy. And when I wasn't having my own fantasies or coming up with my own ways to survive inside my own head, I would only read myths, I read fairy tales, and I'd read, you know, adventure stories. I especially, since my father was gone traveling all over the world, read adventure books that he read when he was a boy that he left behind in the attic of my house, which was right next door to my room, with a wonderful cemetery view. And the main ones he left behind were Edgar Rice Burroughs, a series of books about Mars called John Carter of Mars. And I think they made a really, really expensive, really bad movie of it recently. Is it bad? Terrible, too bad. Because I really wanted to see that because I was a big John Carter fan. John Carter is a guy who was a Confederate captain during the war. I mean, Burroughs goes way back. So, you know, that was recent for him when he was writing it practically. And so he sets it to, and later on, he, you know, he's tall and handsome and athletic and he can take care of himself and blah, 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 blah. He's a great hero. And he winds up, for one reason or another, I can't go into all the details, on Mars. If you want to read some great adventure books, and they're not dated at all, I mean, except for the fact that it takes place in the 1870s or something, no big deal. But he winds up on Mars, this guy, and it doesn't take him too long before conquering all sorts of monsters and weird creatures, and because of his tremendous athletic strength, amplified by the fact that the gravity is different, so he can practically fly or leap really high, and he's even stronger than anybody else there, he becomes the warlord of Mars. Now, if you're a 9-year-old, skinny, lonely kid, and you're living in a little town where other kids maybe pick on you, where you have no father, where your mother is completely... poor woman, completely out of her mind and scary and whatever, to be the warlord of Mars is necessary. It's the only way to balance it all out. So I was the warlord of Mars. So I read all these Edgar Rice Burroughs stories. And what happens, though, and I read comic books, of course, but everybody did. But I was addicted to myths and fairy tales where there were heroes and adventure books, especially the Mars books. And it saved my life. It saved my sanity and it saved my life. The trouble with that is I became so addicted to it. It became so much a part of my personality to daydream and to fantasize that reality itself has never really become as real as it should be to me. I have carried this. So anytime I face an adverse situation later on in my life, including right now, where I had several really bad adverse situations in the last few months, I fall back into this fantasy world. So you become walled inside yourself. And reality itself, even if it's a good reality, becomes painful to endure. And you have to try all over again to understand that reality is what you have for real and the fantasies you can save for dreaming. And like I said, the best I've ever felt in my life is when I didn't fantasize all the time. But at the moment, I'm once again sort of walled in, and that's one reason I love to do this radio show, is because I can break out of the wall and talk to people. But this is not just personal for me. I mean, these things are common to everybody. I'm just an extreme case. I mean, in culture, there's always tales, stories. There's the collective unconscious, you know, instincts. There's the supernatural. And what about religion? Religion itself is, you know, it starts out with fantasies and sometimes starts out with dreams and fantasies. Then it becomes almost hallucinations. Major religions are founded on fantasies, actual hallucinations. People who talk to God, angels come to them. And other people, because of their charisma, listen to these people. And it becomes the reality. Look at the world right now. There are insane, mad dog groups of people going around blowing themselves up and killing other people and executing people who believe what's really, in fact, a hallucination. They're really actually crazy. And since they're not going to go along quietly, I guess they have to go along some other way. So there's always a really vague line between reality and all this stuff. I mean, in the 60s, people took drugs. And, you know, first of all, there was always people understood this, that there had to be days, waking hours and days in a ritual way where the other world was allowed to come into this world just for, let's say, 24 hours, like Halloween or All Souls Eve or whatever it's called, or the Day of the Dead, where the line is crossed, So you acknowledge that there is another world and you don't feel so threatened by it because you let it come out. And there are all kinds of rituals and festivals. In the 60s and later on, I suppose to this day, people took a lot of mind-altering drugs. And they experienced this kind of strange unreality and this dream state and this collective unconscious in what I guess you would call it real time. And it could be very strange or it could be very beautiful depending on what drug you took and how you handled it. Yeah, well, that's creepy scary, right? That's creepy scary. But it can be scary when the line gets crossed. You know, Halloween, there's a little kid who used to live next to me. He's about 2 years old in the apartment I live in right now. He lived next to me, and he was standing in a hallway with his mother once on Halloween. And all through the apartment building, all these witches and goblins and ghosts are coming out of the elevator, you know, the only little kids who want candy. And he was grabbing onto his mother because who are the people who routinely experience either no line or a wavering line often in their waking hours between the other world and this world, between reality and unreality, and they can't tell the difference when the line is really vague? It's children, and it's lunatics and artists. Those are the people who generally will see things. Now, if you're a kid and you're lucky, you have a grown person who knows the difference, hopefully, between what's real and not real and what's crazy and what's normal and what's there actually and what's not. But kids, you know, they have invisible friends. Little kids have invisible friends. They see monsters. I had, you know, two kids when they were little. One of them used to see, and it terrified him, he used to see a big, gigantic spider in the room, black spider with red eyes. And I had to calm him down about that. My daughter used to say that there were monsters in the closet. I mean, if you monsters in the closet. So, and I'd have to open up the closet. You know how it is with little kids, if you've had little kids. Or maybe you remember. I don't know. I don't remember this. Because I didn't have to imagine I saw monsters when I was a kid. I saw plenty of real monsters, so that wasn't my problem. But most kids imagine sometimes that there are monsters because they're scared. They don't want to go to sleep. They're afraid to separate from you every single night. They don't want to drift off into a place. Or maybe they're, you know, nervous or anxious kids, and they project outward. And but they get, kids get a free pass up until a certain age when they become disturbed. You know, or there's another definition for them. But when little kids, my daughter used to say, she was like 5 or 6, she said, I think there are monsters in a closet, and I can't sleep. You have to kill the monsters. And I said, there's no monsters in a closet. She says, yes, there are. There's monsters in a closet. You have to check. It was a way of just keeping in touch with you because she didn't want to go to sleep. She didn't want to separate from me, right? So she said, there's monsters in a closet, because she was just maybe drifting off to sleep at the time. And then all of a sudden, oh, monsters. So I had to go get the flashlight. I open up. I said, she can get out of bed. She said, I'm afraid to go near the monsters. Okay, you can watch from bed. And I open up the closet, and I move all the clothes back, and I shine the flashlight, and, you know, I smack my hand into the wall a couple of times and say, no monsters here. You're cool. Everything is all right. Don't worry about it, because I'm going to be right here for you. I'm going to be right here for you. Well, if you never had anybody right there for you and you thought they were monsters, you tend to keep thinking they're monsters. And it could come out, in very unpleasant ways. And also, people who are absolutely crazy, and I have been off and on in my life once in a while, thank God not for too long, completely out of my mind, where I saw things. And if I get bad enough in my life these days, because I'm going through a bad patch, as the British say, I will feel like, and it's projection, entirely projection on my part, that there are, you know, things around that there really aren't. That, and I don't see anything. It's like a feeling of looming dread or a threat, which is really something I'm feeling inside. And a lot of people have experienced this. People drink, you know. I mean, after all, so many people will have several drinks a day, starting in the morning when they wake up especially, to keep from feeling that dread, that looming awful dread. And my friend just died. A good friend just died about, I guess it's 8 days ago. So I feel that looming sense of mortality, especially when you get older, you feel mortality is like sort of dogging your steps anyhow. But I used to, and then if you're an artist, which I think I could be called by virtue of doing this radio show. I don't paint, I don't dance, I don't draw, but I do these radio shows where I flatter myself that what I do here is artistic, that I do, not autistic, But it's artistic, you know, maybe a little of both. And because what I do is I take my own fears and my own yearnings and my desires and my experiences in life, and I kind of try to connect them in a way which is universal, and to move it from my own self and for people who are listening from one place to another place. So in the course of doing that, you have to be creative. You have to be artistic. But that's what people either kids or absolute crazy people or artists sometimes get a free pass for that. Sometimes they get a free pass for that if they're lucky and people are understanding. And you have to, I have to be creative. I mean, you know, for me, it would be better if I was doing a show 5 days a week because it would keep me sane. To let the valve open during daylight hours, to let my feelings and my thoughts out and my dreams and my imagination out, but in a linear, entertaining way, would probably make me more sane in the rest of my regular life. I used to write more, but I don't really like writing too much. I'm not a bad writer. By the way, if you want to find out more about this show or what I've written or get in touch with me or anything, you can go to Feder Files, FederFiles, FederFiles.com, and get on my mailing list or get in touch with me. I also just recently put up there my memories, a kind of obituary, but a sort of memories of Steve Post, my friend who died, who was a big star on the radio in New York City. So if you want to see that, go to FederFiles.com. So, and there is something called regression in the service of the ego. And there's another psychiatric phrase or psychological phrase. I love this one. Regression in the service of the ego. What it means is you're going through the world, you know, you yourself, you have your day-to-day life and you're working, maybe the job you don't like, maybe the job you do like, except that it could become tedious. And you have your troubles with other people. You have trouble with relationships. So you have all this stuff. And sometimes it's just too much. You know, you get overwhelmed, right? So what happens is you regress. You daydream, or you stay home from work and you watch, you know, 4 days of television. Or, I mean, I was once feeling so bad about the life I had. I was married to somebody I didn't want to be married to. And I was looking for a job because I was out of work. I would go to the movies, and there was one movie theater that had three theaters in one place. You know how there are multiplexes or quadruplexes or whatever they're called. And they didn't really check too much here. I don't know, maybe they didn't think anybody would do a thing like this. Or I would go in and buy a ticket for one movie, and there was three theaters in this one movie theater. I would go in and buy a ticket for, I was supposed to be looking for a job, you understand, so that I would go home to my my wife at the time and say, well, I looked really hard. I was at, you know, Bowder, Booter, and Ginsburg, you know, and I was looking for a job, and I was over at the, Watchovia Systems, or I was at whatever. I lied. I was looking so hard for a job, you know, that I, you know, I just took like about a half hour off, sat in the park. No. I would go in, and I'd go to the first showing at 10 o'clock in the morning, right, or 10:30 or 11 or whatever it was. I'd watch one movie, then, I'd go to the bathroom and walk into another theater. People didn't check or bother me. Watch the next movie, go to the bathroom afterwards, and walk into another theater and see the third movie and then come home. Sometimes people just get sick. And there's no good reason for it, or they can't figure out how they got sick. But you get a cold, and you just feel, tired and achy. And in a way, it's psychological sometimes. So you have to stay home, and you have to eat, anything you want, and just sort of lie there in bed and doze and dream for a couple of days. And then you feel better. You know, if you feel better. And you watch TV, maybe you watch some silly TV, or you rent some movies, or you call up some movies or whatever like that. And you just, or sometimes maybe you just don't go to work. You call up work and you say, I'm sick today. But, you know, you're not sick. You're out there and if you have a car, you're driving around, you hang out in a park, you listen to the wind in the trees, you look around. or you hang out with your friends, or maybe you go to the beach or something like that, and you just sort of lie there. And it's called regression in service of the ego, where you just go backwards and just do what you like a little kid without any responsibilities, so that you give yourself a break. Because it's just relentless. Life is relentless. Real life, everyday life can be relentless, and you just need a break. People work so hard these days. They work extra hours. They work two jobs. They can't retire at the age of 60 or 65 or even older. Because in the United States, something like 150 people own 75% or 90% of all the wealth in the country. That's why people become political. That's why people are political, because of the astounding, immoral, obscene inequity of the whole thing. You have to, you have nothing, or you have very little, or you're scrambling all the time and working like a dog to make ends meet, even though you're making what ordinarily might be good money. Because everybody at the top is trying to get richer and richer and richer. And it comes out of your bone marrow. I mean, they take it from you. They suck it from you like vampires. So you have to. I mean, people need a lot of regression in service of the ego. I mean, there's always been this stuff in society where there are, like I said, there are days like Halloween or days where, like Mardi Gras, where everybody acts like a child or crazy or lunatic. Sometimes you have to do this. People need these kind of crazy rituals. I suppose a lot of video games serve this, except that people become addicted to it. You can become addicted to these things, and it's a sad thing. Now, I've had, like I talked to you, the main fantasies that I used to have to put myself to sleep at night. Now, sometimes what I do is I listen to audiobooks. I plug an audio. I can't go to sleep without an audiobook telling a story. I can't listen to nonfiction. I don't want to hear about the history of the Spanish Civil War in my head when I'm trying to go to sleep. Nobody ever read me stories when I was little. Oh, yes, you could cry for me if you want. But I do it plenty myself. I read my kids stories, so I made up for it. But there was nobody reading me any stories, believe me. So I like to have stories in my old age now. I love to have stories. So I get these great books, these great historical novels. I love these things. Take place in, 1200 AD or 1880 or 1940 or whatever it is. And, fairly good writers and page turner kind of things, right? And I listen to them and I fall asleep to them. And then I get up 2 hours later and the thing is still running. I fell asleep. So the next day I have to rewind it somehow, or I have to search for it on my iPod where I stopped listening to it. and where I fell asleep and it kept running. But so it was rescue fantasies where I rescue people, and the whole world sees what a great hero I am. So that's like the warlord of Mars moved forward, right? The other one, of course, is money. And who doesn't have a fantasy about money? Winning the lottery. And, of course, I used to start out having fantasies where I would win $1 million. I go all the way back to where they started the lottery, and it was $1 million. But there's inflation. So I noticed that my fantasies about money, and the fantasies about money would be when I, this is just my personality, right? When I won the lottery or somehow somebody, or I found a treasure chest with $1 million in it, the whole fantasy, which could last for hours if I needed it, would be who I would give it to and how I would help people. Total strangers, usually my best friends, of course, my relatives. I mean, that's what my fantasies were all about, is what I would do with the money. And as an afterthought, like a dope, I would think, oh, yeah, and what might I do for myself with the spare change that's left over? Well, yeah, the people are different. I mean, you know who you are. But I would have constant money fantasies when I wasn't having my violent, sometimes rescue fantasies of keeping people safe from bad guys. Sometimes your life and your fantasies mix together. I mean, after all, I had a job as a probation officer for many, many years with a badge and a gun. And I was always trying to make sure that the really bad guys, that I got them, that I found them, and I made sure that they were sentenced to long terms in jail, right? So your fantasies and the way you run your life are inseparable, I think, sometimes. And then I've had visions. I've had visions. I've had one or two visions in my life. The biggest, most astounding revelation I ever had, because it's like a revelation, you know, like you read in the Bible, revelations. The one that really changed my life was I had a vision once. I was sitting in my bookstore that I owned out in Park Slope, and I had a vision, an absolute true vision. I knew it was true, of me in a parallel world. It was this world, but it was me at the same time. It was me long ago and me right now, too. A different me living at the same time as me on a Greek island somewhere, dressed completely in white. And I was sort of androgynous. I was dressed completely in white. And I lived at the top of a mountain. And I sat on this beautiful white marble platform that was level to the ground. And people, animals would come up who ordinarily would be, you know, kill and be killed. And they would just lie there and they were able to rest from their daily, you know, predatory life. And men and women would come up and ask me for the answers to all kinds of serious, important questions. And I would sit in the middle of this white marble platform. And the trees, there was a clearing in the trees right above me, went straight up to heaven. And I would receive the answer from the gods. And I was like an oracle. And then I would give the answer to these people who had come up there with gifts of whatever, you know, food or drink or something like that. And that was a vision I got. That was a vision I got. And this was before I ever went on the radio. And I still feel like what I do on the radio is a little bit like that. Well, anyhow, I started off talking about daydreaming. And daydreaming is an absolutely natural thing. Regression in the service of the ego. Sometimes you just have to go off and dream. You have to dream. You dream when you're asleep, but sometimes in the middle of the day, you just sort of daydream. You go off, and that's what you do.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in. Then I watch them roll away again, yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay, 'cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Everything still remains the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Listen, sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. Listen, 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay.